Welcome to the Shooting the Cue podcast, presented by Heath Riles Barbecue, with tips, tricks, and an inside look with some of the top pitmasters in the game. Now here's your host, Heath Riles.
Welcome back for another episode of Shooting the Cue. Today, of course, I'm joined by my lovely wife, Candace. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good.
And John and Jason Wade of Optimus Swine. How are y'all gentlemen doing today?
We're great.
Doing good. We're in Mississippi.
We made it.
Well, there ain't much here, is it?
It's kind of cool,
There's
actually.
There's plenty here.
You guys got a lot more here going on than we do in our little town.
Well, this is DeSoto County is one of the busiest, or has been one of the busiest counties. When I first moved up here, it was the fastest growing county in the U.S. for like 10 years straight.
I can believe it.
The growth around here, the school systems are really good.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
There was one school here when I was a kid. Now there's
seven.
I don't even know how many.
Building another one, eight. I don't know, but a lot.
That's good. It's good. People are coming here.
It is. And, of course, y'all are in town for the South Haven Spring Fest, right?
That's right.
Excited about it. And, little jitters.
Well, I'm going to tell you, y'all are very lucky and very fortunate. What I mean by that, they paved it. Has it been 3 years ago, 2 years ago?
Two, maybe? Two. I don't know exactly, but.
But at one point, it used to be a solid mud hole, and it always,
oh, really?
Yeah. It always rains.
No gravel?
No, not gravel.
Just that
was
dirt.
They had roads. Three roads going up.
You would be on the grass.
On the grass. So on Sundays, I can remember pulling my trailer out of the mud and then pulling everything out to the street one by one, washing it, loading it in the trailer, then going home and unloading it so it could dry and not mildew in the trailer.
Yeah.
That's
extra work right there.
Were you a Cub Scout?
No.
No?
Well, I guess I was in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, they had that's where we had to do the same kind of stuff. Take it all out, clean it up, put it away dry.
Yeah, that was because you didn't want nothing to mildew, and it was rough doing all that. You know how grills are and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So pretty wild. So before I go any further, for people that don't know y'all, can y'all kind of tell everybody who you are, where you're from, and how you got started in the barbecue?
Well, I would love to. We're from Williamsburg, Virginia. We're brothers. I'm the older, better-looking brother.
Here we go.
John is the brains of the operation, but when you pull me into town, generally you hear a deep gasp from the locals. And once they get over my beauty, then I'm into town, and we
take over from there.
Yeah, John takes it from there. We are restaurateurs. We own a restaurant called Two Drummers Smokehouse in Williamsburg, Virginia. And we started in 2013 in barbecue business. I was a chef at other restaurants, and John and I wanted to open a business for ourselves. We knew it was going to be a restaurant. Wasn't quite sure what kind it was, and when we got there was a beautiful Southern Pride smoker in there, and John and I looked at each other and said, I guess we're in the barbecue business.
Yeah, it was funny because Jason's like a classic trained chef. He's got qualifications. He's extremely good. I'm kind of like a really awesome dishwasher. It's probably the fastest dishwasher in Virginia. And so when we got to that location and we saw that Southern Pride pit, it was kind of like this. I was like, I got this, Jay. You know, like, you put the saute pans down and we're going to fire up some, you know, some charcoal and we're going to get this party started. And that was, 2013. We've been going strong. We're in our 10th or we're in our 11th year of restaurant ownership.
So you made it through COVID.
We did.
That's a plus. Lots of people didn't.
Huge plus.
It could go one or the other way with COVID. You either closed or you became
well.
A new entity.
Yeah.
You did really well. And we were lucky. We did pretty well. And we kept all of our staff. The front of the house staff, usually they were going to tables and taking orders at the table. We said, you take it over the phone, and here's our insurance information and our company vehicle, and they live about 7 miles that way. Yeah. We're like the only restaurant within 10 miles in either direction.
Yeah, the clients we were serving, it was the first time any of them ever had delivery in their life. They were all out in the country, so never a delivery pizza, never Chinese. You know, the first
barbecue
thing they had was Two Drummers Barbecue to their door. So.
Well, I mean, so is that what you guys really done was look at the what you had there? You know, you said you were kind of in between the towns and go, we're going to go all in on delivery and marketing and telling these people what we got. So did y'all like change up weekly and daily specials to keep it fresh? Or
yeah,
what did y'all do?
It became essentially Facebook became our line of communication with our customer. And we kind of told them that. We were like, you go on Facebook, find a Two Drummer Smokehouse, and we're going to tell you daily what we're doing. It was to the point where we were like, all right, it's noon. 5 p.m., this window closes. These meals are no longer available. Now we're going into the, you know, this meal. Because we were doing fried chicken. Yeah. It became kind of a thing. We were like, let's do fried chicken. It takes time. So it was like a 45-minute process of getting a round of chicken out. And so we said, by this point, we can't cook any more rounds of chicken, and the chicken's done. So we'll go into... We had
chili bake or whatever.
Yeah, we had all sorts of cool family meals.
Yeah.
The chili bake for 5 people. And we tried to keep it affordable, you know, because we thought that was really going to be the thing. The problem was going to be keeping the money coming in and people having money to pay for food. So we had to keep it down, keep the options really wide open. We were cooking Vietnamese meals. I mean, we were doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of barbecue.
So you kind of brought back some of your chef influence to some of it, I'm assuming.
It was a situation. There was times where you could not get the foods that you normally got.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You had to adapt with what you had and make some meals. And it was pretty amazing that you could start to see some of the goodness come out in people during that time. You know, we are so nasty to each other most of the times, but during that first part of COVID, when people were scared, there was people pulling into our driveway that knew that, you know, restaurants were dying on a vine, and they'd write us a check. Here's a check for $500. Keep your employees working. And so the goodness came out in people, and they were willing to try things. Most people weren't looking for Vietnamese short ribs.
Well, that and the services. You know, we discontinued certain services that people were living for. And we said, look, we just can't keep up with that. We can't continue to do that at a quality point. Can you let us provide you with this? And they were like, yes, that sounds great. And we never saw that in the restaurant business. I mean, you take the fried wings off the menu and you put smoked fried wings on the menu, and all of a sudden you got there's a mob out front, you know, with pitchforks. Yeah. So,
but it's probably a lot easier smoking a load of wings on a rotisserie pit and then pulling them off, let's face it, chilling it. And then
doing the dip,
put them in a deep fryer, and then just dipping them and throwing them. And they're better wings to me anyway.
They're so good,
for sure.
Than all the way fried. Wow. And so I know I'm probably skipping around here a little bit. We're talking about food. You guys also bought a custom Outlaw to do grill on as well, right?
Yes, we've kind of tried to continue to rebuild the our pit at the restaurant. We were kind of, he said earlier, we used a Southern Pride. That we outgrew. We needed a bigger pit, so we went into an Old Hickory SSL. That we kind of outgrew, so we were running offset grills in tandem, you know, kind of around. And my chef goes, man, I really like the flavor on these offsets. And no offense to anybody out there with the Old Hickories. I mean, if you know how to make a deep flavor in there, you'll get it in there. Mm-hmm. My guys are kind of trying to keep up with a lot of volume. So it was, I said, look, try this out. I brought in my little 2660 that I got from Jay, and next day, the pitmaster's like, "This, we got to have this flavor. We got to have this texture." And so we started doing it, but we had this other pit, okay? We have this pit called a BQ grill out of Elm City, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's just a hog cooker.
Yeah.
But it's
gas,
all
propane.
You can do gas or you can do charcoal. We have a charcoal pit, and that it's hard to manage. It's more work. You got to run a coal forge and keep that thing stocked. But the flavor, you know, this over the coal is dripping down in there, and like the neighbors would smell it. You could see people coming out of their house like, I guess we're going to Drummers for lunch today. And so we said, we got to get that flavor into this Outlaw pit somehow. And Jay is like this freaking chemist or this master scientist over there with his guys, and they drew it up, and they said, this should work. But essentially, we put a coal box underneath of the chamber, the cooking chamber in an Outlaw.
Kind of like the hosses.
Like the hoss in the hog, kind of. But we have three different doors underneath the length of the BFO. So we can put, if you've got chicken over here, you got pork over here, and you got brisket over here, you just add coals underneath of that spot that you want to get that coal dripping.
Mm-hmm.
But before we had one coal box, and we were having to move things all the time. We were moving the butts now down to this end of the grill. Now get the butts over here. Now let's move the briskets over and just kind of get them to drip. And we said, no, let's put that coal option all the way across the bottom. And Jay's built two BFOs with coal across. Now we're all the way across the bottom.
Wow. So y'all have two BFOs inside the restaurant as well.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Because one of the pictures I've seen, I think y'all were cooking pork steaks maybe for a special. And you could see all those pork steaks laid across that grill.
Yeah.
Flaming up.
So we'll do, yeah, when we get like a special or something like that, we'll get the cameras out, try to get some video of it. But otherwise, I mean, we run those pits 7 days a week.
Yeah. Wow.
Every day.
Every day.
And so we just
y'all are cranking out some major volume then.
It's amazing. We're out in the country. You would think that we'd be lucky to have any customers there. On many a Saturday night, we'll serve 500-600 people. So it's really? It's crazy. It's really a beautiful problem to have.
We're cooking hot and fast, so we can do two shifts of barbecue. We'll get through a lunch and we'll run another round of barbecue for the morning. So we'll cook today for tomorrow, essentially, but everything holds hot.
Yeah.
Not the chicken, not the small meats, you know, not
just
ribs.
Your big meats.
Big meats only. Yeah.
Yeah. And we all know that resting them like it. I guess y'all are using auto shams probably.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do.
It's unbelievable.
Auto shams better than since sliced loaf bread.
Yeah, that's we used to cool down and then reheat a lot. And that was the health department really wanted us to do that. And we were seeing a lot of crumbly edges and a lot of overcooked meat because of that second cook.
Yeah.
But just like holding it right there where the health department says this is safe. You don't want to evaporate it. So you just kind of stay in that safe zone. And the next day, the barbecue, I think it's better.
It's unbelievable.
I agree. And you know, that's the same thing. We were talking about Little Miss Barbecue yesterday. They cook like that. And I think their last person leaves like at 9 or 10 p.m. Everything's off the grill by then in auto shams. They come back the next morning like at 5 a.m., you know, whatever it is, to ensure the pits are lit back up good and you get ribs on and all that for the lunch service. And your big meats, your butts and your briskets, and they do some other big meats too, shoulder claws and things like that, is all nice. Sitting there and it's perfectly rendered, ready to go, full of moisture.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we started doing it, we had the one outlaw, the BFO, and we were doing a good job keeping up, but we still ran that old Hickory SSL. We had a guy come through, and he's on this all-wood cooked barbecue trail. His name's John Tanner. He's got this nice blog. And we were like, man, I'd really like to get in that blog. So we just kind of yanked the cord on the old Hickory pit, you know, took the gas off of it. And I called Nick Wolfort, you know, Great Pigs in the Sky, and I was like, how do y'all run these old Hickory CTOs without gas? And he's like, it's that door. You just kind of open and close the door on the bottom. I was like, it's that easy? So we started doing it on the SSL. And before the second BFO showed up, we'd kind of fallen in love with cooking on this SSL with no gas, but it was time to move on.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I think they've started putting, like air vents on some of the old Hickories, the CTOs and the double wides like that. And Nick, as a matter of fact, has got one of my new double wides I bought.
Does he?
I know, yeah. I bought it off the internet used, and then he went and got it for me and all that. And so it was actually dirty when it got here, so he took it, cleaned it up and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah. Don't you just love cleaning up everybody else's barbecue?
I don't love cleaning up my own.
It sounds like Nick does.
You know, Nick's a workhorse, man.
He's the man.
I mean, getting inside those old Hickory pits like he does, I would love to know the number of butts that he has actually cooked. And we were talking about his age last night. Nick is about to turn 30. And so to be 30, he's now about to turn 30, yeah. I guarantee he's cooked more meat than us.
Wow.
I mean, he has cooked a lot.
Yeah, he goes out there with Operation Barbecue Relief, doesn't he?
He used to be a part of Operation Barbecue Relief even before. I mean, he worked for him at one time. He don't anymore. But even before that, he was out doing pits when he was 14, 15 years old, loading pits and cooking rounds of butts for John Wheeler. And I mean, hams.
His dad was always in barbecue, involved. So I mean, he kind of was brought up in barbecue.
I knew he could cook the first time I saw him in Galax, and before he started cooking, he broke out the coveralls. I said, son, it's about to get porky in here.
We pulled up the lawn chairs. We were like, this is going down. Let's see this happen.
Well, that onesie that he zips up and puts on, you know, that like he's in a maintenance oil change.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
And blue, and he's got his, you know, 4 or 5 chest hairs hanging and all that, you know. And he looks like, I don't want to say John Belushi, but like a thinner version of John Belushi.
There you go.
I mean? He looks like a thin version of John Belushi with his hair all messed up. And he's got a beer in his hand and a cigarette. I mean, that's who he looks like. Saturday.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a total person.
Renaissance man.
Pretty crazy. So we talked about the restaurant business. Let's talk about competition barbecue. So how did you get into competition barbecue? The restaurant kind of led you that way?
Yeah.
Or what?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've watched Barbecue Pitmaster season 1. And a lot of people bring that up. And then it was like, I think I'm going to buy that season on Amazon, you know. And it was to the point where we were pulling it up at work and showing everybody, and we just kind of got the bug. And we went to Myron's class, October of 2018. And on the way home, we stopped at Ben Lang's and picked up
No, that's not how it went down at all. Yep,
backwards.
Yeah, we pulled into Myron's class with a brand new Lang on the back of the truck. And let me tell you, Myron started razzing us on the way in the door.
I am sure that he did.
And, you know,
it wasn't mean.
It was all in good fun. You know, you got to get at the beginning of Myron's classes, you got to give him one guy to pick on. That was us.
Yeah, and we sat up front too, so it was really easy to find us. We were taking notes real hard, you know. And so then after that class, we went and did our first contest. It was in Lenexa, Virginia. And it was a KCBS backyard and pro. And it was the first time they'd done backyard. But we did pro. And we got our asses handed to us, you know, running Myron's program in the Mid-Atlantic. You know, it was just the opposite profile from what they were looking for. Yeah. So we went and did a class with Old Virginia Smoke, Luke Darnell.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Luke.
And then we did that class again, and we really kind of dialed in that Mid-Atlantic barbecue thing. And by that point, we'd gotten a couple calls. We'd gone back to backyard, and the bug was just full on. I mean, we can't stop. We're doing 30-plus contests a year.
All KCBS contests.
At this point. Yeah. We have high aspirations of doing some MBN coming soon.
This man wants to cook a pig in MBN.
Well, that. I want to be in all facets of barbecue. You know, I just want to see what's out there and experience it firsthand. Whether I experience it at the bottom or at the top doesn't quite matter to me, just so long as we get a chance to see ourselves.
Well, you sound like me. I mean, I like a good challenge.
Yeah.
And so if you've already kind of, I mean, y'all are doing really well in KCBS. You finished, what, ninth of the year in 2023 overall. I know how much of a feat that is, you know, cooking like that, and especially in KCBS, the way the point series is. Yeah. And so wanting to try other sanctioning bodies, I've been off down to FBA before. We got some calls down there. I really liked it, and I kind of want to go cook this Champions Barbecue Alliance. I hear them talk about in Texas and other places, but I want to do a chili cook-off. I never have done a chili cook-off.
Have you seen the pizza one?
I have seen some of the pizza stuff.
That's where I want to get
it. It's pretty cool.
I haven't seen that.
It seems neat to me.
Well, apparently they do everything. I don't know if y'all watched that Malcolm episode. He did a squirrel thing. He was a judge for a squirrel. I'm like, apparently there's cook-offs for everything.
We were like writing it down. We were like, barbecued raccoon. Okay. This might be good. We can get those where we live.
I mean, I've had barbecue coons several times at all game dinners. I mean, it's kind of gamey. I mean, I like it. I mean, it's all right.
And was it with or without rabies?
I don't know.
Was it, did you see it during the day? Because if you see it during the day, it's a very questionable thing whether you want to get near that raccoon.
I mean,
is it like a dark meat?
It is a dark meat, and it's stringy and almost like dry, like if you overcook a pot roast. Mm-hmm. It's very lean meat and very gamey.
Sounds like it'd go good in a jambalaya or some gumbo, Brunswick something stew. Brunswick stew.
Yes, it would. Something like that to get stringy and all that, it would. Mm-hmm. It would, no doubt.
I'll just take y'all's word on it.
That's the next contest that'll be out. There's KCBS, and there's the Raccoon Barbecue Alliance. We'll get that one going.
Well, we could.
Well, and it's going to be like Malcolm was saying about the squirrel. They're supposed to bring their own squirrels to cook.
That's so crazy.
Like, you got to go hunting, and then you can't go
use
to the barbecue.
You got to use like a BB gun when you're hunting squirrels, right?
I don't know. Like, I've never done it.
You'll waste that thing with a gun.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be like rifle. A big hole in it.
It's gone.
I mean, it just depends, I guess. I mean, what you want. So let me ask this. Tell me about you being a drummer.
So we're both drummers.
Both
drummers.
And my son, Alex, who's the other part of our team, is a drummer currently. We're from a little bit of a, how would you describe it? It's not, fraternity doesn't even help describe it.
It's sort of like a fraternity. We were, we live in Colonial Williamsburg, literally. And so as they have there what is their equivalent of Mickey Mouse to Disney, their Mickey Mouse is the Colonial Williamsburg Fife and Drum Corps. And so as children, you go in and you learn to be the drummer boy or fifer, obviously. And during those times, it was all male. And this was in the 80s that we were in it. Now John's son is in this Fife and Drum Corps. And so they go and they perform this music. And they have the costumes, and it affords you a lot of opportunities as a child that you might never think you could get. For example, we marched in the Macy's Christmas Day Parade. We performed for,
President of China's arrival. You know, we'd be at the bottom of
of
the stairs, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
The music that we play is traditional. The uniform, even the age, and it was an all-male position historically.
Right.
But now that's obviously evolved. The girls that are coming in the core are better than the guys. They're, like, way better musicians, and it's happening regularly that the guys are like, whoa, like, I'm not all that in a bag of chips. So we
– Just the chips.
Just the chips. So we had a position – our job down in the Colonial Williamsburg was to communicate on behalf of, like, for us to reach a group of people, say, a half a mile away. We need to get them to come over to where we are. So they get the Fife and Drum Boys out there. They play a little performance, and you'd see people coming out of the woodwork to the location where they needed everybody to go. So we kind of got used to that, you know, being kind of like in a communication role, kind of being in charge of talking with everybody and getting everybody around. And so the leadership thing was kind of it was inherent after that. And we kind of took that from the Fife and Drum Corps into our restaurant background. I mean, we've been cooking together since we graduated high school.
Yeah. And the drumming went on from there for us. You know, we were both in rock bands. Our dad, our whole lives, that's how he put the bacon on the table, was playing rock and roll. And so we thought we were going to be rock stars. You know, for me, that did not take off at all. But John did very well with music and toured for about 10 years in the Mid-Atlantic with a cover band. And when we opened our restaurant in 2013, he was still performing 5 nights a week. And so yeah, he would
barbecue in the morning and rock and roll at night. That's why I look like the older brother, but I'm actually the younger brother.
Well, I mean, that life can take a toll on you, yeah. I would imagine.
I mean, still trying to catch up some rest.
I mean, I could imagine. I could only imagine. Let me say that.
So, I mean, as you can imagine, it kind of relates really well to what our routine is out here at barbecue. I mean, we're up early as hell. We're up late. You got work to do the whole time. There's something to do. And then there's carrying a charisma around and representing brands, you know, and having fun, not being a dud.
That's right.
You know, cooking well. So
putting on your game face when you got to put it on, whether you want to or not. You reach deep, get in there and do it. We learned all that through music.
Well, and that's the thing about it. You know, you really got to love this craft, because when you stick the amount of money into it to go cook a contest or go to an event, you really want to shine through and be the best you can be.
That's it.
And so either I'm going to try to do my very best or I'm not going to do it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have more fun now than being as serious as I used to be, but I still want to be competitive when I go out.
Right.
I mean, or it's not worth spending the money to go out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that means it brings a little stress to the table. You got to have, you know, a lot more care. If you want to be at that level, you got to bring it. It doesn't just happen.
Well, to talk about y'all's success you've had, what do you think has been one of the key factors of the success y'all have had in barbecue?
I think tenacity is the thing that we do really well. It's get back up in the morning after we've fallen flat on our face and go do it again. If you wake up one morning in business and all of a sudden there's a global pandemic, get your work pants on and go to work and try again, try harder. And that's been the same thing for us in competition barbecue is, you know, we entered this thing thinking, hey, we're chefs, we're going to kick these guys' butts. And literally we have had to humble ourselves and go, okay, it's time to keep it real. When keeping it real gets real. So it's for us, it's about, okay, we did not do well. Now what are we going to do? Let's try again.
Well, we all know you can win with your worst and lose with your best.
That's right.
Any day of the week.
Yeah. That's true.
It's all about what table you get on.
That's it.
It is.
And that has a lot to do with us. And a lot of people have good flavors, but cooking the tenderness is the key, 100%. And a lot of people don't realize that you got to go past that point of tenderness, because the air pressure and you know, cooling and everything else, it's going to draw it back to perfect.
That's
you
right.
You can't cook it to perfect. You got to go a little past perfect to come back to perfect.
Right. We first learned about that with the Wagyu briskets, you know. It was always kind of this, you feel it and you know it's done, kind of put it off to the side. But for some reason, that Wagyu likes to tighten back up again as it's cooling down and those fats are starting to get hard again. Mm-hmm. So we learned it's like when you feel like it's done, just put it back in for another like 5 to 10, 15 minutes based on the thickness of the meat. Brisket, we'll give it another 15. Mm-hmm. You know, ribs, I might pop them in there just maybe another 5 minutes. But I always look for that wiggle, you know. If it bends, I'm not going to push it any further than that. But brisket, it's one of those things. It'll bend, and it'll go right back into that.
It sure will, in a heart, especially depending on how you trimmed it down.
Right.
You know, especially.
So you guys have the restaurant. Mm-hmm. You do competition barbecue. But you also have a butcher shop. Is that correct?
That's yes. right.
So that's you right. just can't get enough of food and the meat.
Gluttons for punishment.
yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of like one drives the other. And when we were talking about COVID earlier, one of the things that came out of COVID was our ability to resource things. We were kind of spreading the love in the barbecue world. I mean, we had buddies that cook KCBS, live kind of mm-hmm. locally. They obviously can cook, but they didn't have access to any meat. Well, we were that access. So we were basically opened up our restaurant as a market for bulk purchasing. From there, we needed a larger facility. You know, like once we opened up that door, it became a thing, and it was like, well, we got to go somewhere.
Not only that, we had all this great high-end Prairie Fresh pork or Compar Duroc or whatever we were using that week, and you know, competition barbecue is wasteful. And as chefs, we just could not handle looking at 50% of that pork being scrap, trash, whatever you want to call it. We wanted to respect that and use that as a resource. And so we knew we wanted to get in the sausage business. And when our butcher shop started, we were literally just thinking butts, ribs, and sausage. It turned into a lot more than that. You know, what do we got? Cow's tongue and sweetbreads and you name it, wow. We got it. But that's
but no
how it
raccoon.
Started.
No raccoon.
The USDA is pretty firm on the stamp, and I'm pretty sure a stamped raccoon would be way more than anybody's willing to pay for it.
So are you guys doing, are you just ordering from like Sysco or US Foods or PFG and breaking down, or you're not doing any whole sides of beef and breaking down?
Not yet. And that's mainly size of our facility. You know, we took another defunct restaurant and turned it into this butcher shop. And so once we can fit a rail system in there, we'll be butchering some whole hogs and whole cattle. You know, we know enough just to make us dangerous, but that for us has been part of the, you know, the learning process has been the fun part. So it's been fun to brush off the pre-barbecue skills and go, okay, I guess today we're tying, you know, crown roast or whatever it is we decide we want to do. So it's been a lot of fun, and the butcher shop is challenging in ways for us that, you know, we didn't think. It's all chef's dreams to own a butcher shop. But the reality is the butcher shop world is not a real profitable business. That's because meat is so expensive, and your competitors down the street are going to be able to undercut you because they're selling toilet paper and dish soap and laundry detergent, and that's where they're making their money. You know, so to be a butcher shop, you have to provide a service.
Yeah.
And that service has to offset the difference in price. And so that part has been really difficult to swallow, but luckily we have a restaurant to help us use all the fun things that we create there. So anyway.
Yeah, and we're teaching the community stuff that they didn't know, that we've come out into the barbecue, into the culture, gone out in the parking lots, seen this guy do that trick, seen that guy do that trick, and we just turn it around and hand it over to our community. You know, we're not like giving them recipes and like you say on the show, you still got to cook it, right?
Yeah.
But we give them a lot of knowledge, and that's kind of the service they get there. And then in the same regard for us, we don't really have any waste. And if there is some kind of waste that's going to happen, you cook it and you can sell it to a customer, you know, at the restaurant. Yeah. So, you know, starting with COVID and helping teams out all the way to where we are now, I mean, it's it's come full circle, and our community is reaping the benefits.
That's really, really cool. So how many people do y'all employ through all your three businesses there?
We've got 43 total employees right now, which is a lot. And they love to make us work hard for a little bit of money.
That's one of the lowest numbers of staff number. That's the lowest staff number we've probably had in 10 years. But we've fine-tuned it, you know. Yeah. Where we had six guys standing on the line on a Friday night, you know, one guy working, and like kind of like you see the Department of Transportation, there's one guy working and five people standing around him. We've gotten to the point where there's three guys on the line, and all three of them are doing their job, you know. That took time. Yeah. Figure out how to really delegate.
Yes, those yes, I fully understand all that as well.
Yeah, the delegating.
And operations procedures and things like that. It's hard to, because when you first go in, you want to go all in and make sure that you're going to provide that service and not let them down. But then also you got to fine tune things to where you can actually make a little bit of money, because if not, it can get oversaturated real quick. And everybody thinks just because you're a business owner, oh, he's getting filthy rich.
No.
Yeah. You see it come in, and you see it immediately leave and go out. You get to hold on to it for just a minute.
Yep.
That's all you do.
That's just right. Long enough to dream.
Just long enough to dream and go, man, I wish I could do this. And then here comes the bill, and then here comes the tax bill.
The taxes, yep.
That's it.
Yeah, pretty crazy. So another question, where did you come up with the name Optimus Swine for a competition barbecue team?
So we were originally called Two Drummers Q Crew. And that was our first, you know, when we went to Lenexa and we did that first contest in 19. And we quickly realized that there was this level of personality in barbecue, and a lot of it could come out just in your name. And so we were like, I feel like we're a little bit more fun than this. You know, the Two Drummers Q Crew thing is definitely our formal, it's how you find us on the internet. It's how you find us when you come to Williamsburg. You look for Two Drummers. But we wanted something while we were out doing the barbecue thing to kind of fit in the personality. And we were riding around with my son. He's 12.
And let's face it, we're 80s nerds.
We'll always be 80s nerds. And another thing that I really wanted to do was kind of preserve our Jason and I being brothers, having grown up together. We're still like the kids that we were when this whole thing started. We're not these just washed up old dudes, you know. And so it kind of gave us an opportunity to always have something fun to fall back on. And since then, it's become, all right, now how do we fit this Optimus Swine name? Like, what are we going to do? And, like, our trailers is completely built out. My truck, tons of gadgets, little switches, and it's made it kind of fun to fit the role.
That's pretty cool.
So has it always just been easy to work together as brothers, though? Or no, well, I mean, seriously, it's like y'all do everything. All of your businesses together. So yeah. I mean, you have to see each other every single day.
Every day.
I would say it's not easy, but it's definitely easier to forgive and to come back from disagreements or whatever.
Yeah.
And to surrender control to another business partner and things like that, because we trust each other.
Right, of course.
So I'd say that's been
easy. Hardest to get out of each other's way. We're both alphas, we're both type A's. For me, you know, I was a chef, and he was one of my employees working in restaurants before.
A really good dishwasher.
But, you know, it has been a challenge for us to work with each other, but it's one that we relish, and it's been really great for both of our personal growth. When we're out on the competition barbecue, John is in the driver's seat. That's a very difficult thing for me to do by nature. However, it's helped me tremendously in letting go of the little stuff and going worrying about what's real and what needs to be done at a given point. And it's helped me work on myself as a person, you know, not needing to be the center of attention and the emphasis of any story or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's really helped us grow as people, and it's redefined our relationship as brothers. You know, we've had to, as brothers, you can just beat each other up in the parking lot somewhere and then you get over it. But that's not acceptable when you're business partners and you've got 43 employees looking at you going, what are we supposed to do?
They're fighting again.
They're fighting again. So anyway, it's been an amazing thing for us to get to work together, and it's made us really, really close.
Yeah,
I sleep on the top bunk in the competition trailer, and he sleeps on the bottom bunk, and it's been like that for 40 years.
40 years. Wow. So I have to ask, do y'all split the proteins at the contest?
Once again, as he said, once we get to a barbecue thing, it is definitely I'm in the driver's seat. When we're at the restaurant or at the butcher shop, it's the other way around. And anything he needs, or if he hasn't seen something that needs to be done, I'll jump on it, right? But out here, starting on Tuesday, it's my baby. You know, I go to work, but I come home and I'm sleeping and breathing this weekend coming up. And then when we get there, I mean, he's logistically, he helps us get there. He helps us keep clean. He helps make sure I'm on the timeline. I'm not off having a drink with some buddies and completely missing the job at hand, right? Yeah, so
that is.
But then there's been times where, I mean, it hits the fan, you know, like I got sick from heat one time at a contest, and I passed out in the bathroom by myself. He didn't even know. He was out there putting the pork box together and getting it turned in, you know? So like, I see these teams that go out and do it by themselves. One guy, he does everything. I don't know how the hell they do it. I would never want to do it.
Man, I'm with you. It's hard. I've done it, and it's like, no, that ain't me. And that's why I don't mind going to cook an MB and rib one category. 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
I tell people that. That's the beauty about MB and you don't have to cook 4 meats, nothing. You can cook one and still win a contest.
Yeah.
So it's and now they've got it where you can cook pork collars for pork. And so
what, in Memphis? MBN?
In MBN, yeah. That's cool. So it's you can come out there with a couple drums and knock it out.
Off you go.
Yeah.
Another 3-hour cook.
Was that another did anybody from the barbecue league have anything to do with that happen in the Memphis thing? Because I know they pulled some strings for that in KCBS. Wrong about them doing it, but
I have pushed for the Memphis Barbecue Network to kind of mimic KCBS's rule forever, because we have about 5 dual contests a year, right? Sorry, my sinuses are killing me.
The pollen's
rough. And so with having those 5 dual contests a year, you always have a ton of KCBS teams, not a ton, that are really intrigued, that want to cross over, but some would, some never would, right? And so usually I get a lot of phone calls asking about blind boxes or asking about what flavor profile or whatever. And I'm like, cook the same flavor profile. When I cook KCBS MBN, the sauce don't change. I make one sauce for everything. You know, everybody else is making 3 or 4 sauces. It don't take all that. And so most of the KCBS teams have done very well that cook ribs or pork. And so the problem is MBN wanted you to cook a full butt, you know, 8 pounds. A lot of KCBS teams don't. They don't cook whole shoulders. I finally got to go to the butts. And then I think it's been about 5 years. And a couple of other guys really got on them this year. They changed up some board members, and they got it done. And I kind of like the fact, I mean, I don't think a pork collar is going to win the contest a grand when you get to finals. But just being able to cook that and put it in the box to get you there, still need to have a whole butt or something, you know, to close it with.
Right.
You know, when the final judges come around. But at least you don't have to get up or stay up as late cooking that.
You'll be
up that morning finishing it off.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they got it pushed through. But, yeah, I kind of initiated that a long time ago, started it up.
So before that, would it be a possibility for a team to kind of just – harvest that money muscle, harvest that collar out of the shoulder, and just say, psh, I'm going to put that off the side. I'm just going to kind of target this in a Memphis thing? Or do they require you to
cook a whole pork shoulder?
All the
Memphis
way.
Memphis in May right now still requires you to cook a whole pork shoulder. You cannot go down there with a Boston butt and cook a Boston butt when you cook Memphis in May. It has to be a whole pork shoulder or a whole hog, 85 pounds or more. And then ribs can be baby backs or spares. Or St. Louis anyway, but I don't recommend that. Yeah, I'd cook baby backs.
St. Louis ribs won't score well, Memphis.
They have been several good KCBS teams that the spare ribs have got them there, and they've made finals. And there's even been, I think, one or two that's actually won a contest. But when it comes to big contest, I've not seen one win it. You know, I think the judges are so used to baby backs around here that you need to stick with baby backs.
Because you can get more bones in a box. on the baby back. You think it has to deal with the size of the box or the actual bite?
You know, baby backs has got that loin on it mm-hmm. and got some fat on it too.
Yeah.
And so they can dry out quicker. So there's a little bit different of a cook there versus a spare rib. Just a little bit. But the finish temps are about the same. Mm-hmm. You know, that baby back, carrying it up, I carried it up to about 208. And same way with that spare, even though it's thicker, that's a perfect bite through for KCBS. Well, the bones start to pop through on MBN. Well, after it cools down, that makes it about perfect bite, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I go to that same number is what I tell people. That's kind of that perfect number. But, yeah, you can fit more bones in the box the way we cut ribs.
Yeah, I've seen it. Sometimes I'm trying to count. I'm trying to figure out how many rows there are. It looks like there's three rows. There might be four rows
I've gotten
of them.
Five rows in a box.
Wow.
That's nuts.
3.5 inches wide, the baby back ribs. And now I go 3 3/4, sometimes 4, depending on when I look at my ribs, how wide they are. We put them on a bandsaw, and the first thing we do is cut the arch out of them,
mm-hmm.
right, where that knuckle bone kind of connects down there.
Because
you know when you're cutting with a knife, that knuckle bone, when it gets down the bottom, you kind of take that knife and kind of rotate around it, right?
Yep. Got to go around it.
Well, when you cut that off, you just go straight through it with a knife, and then it will actually set in the box. If you don't cut the knuckle off, it will fall forward every time.
Right.
And so cutting that off, and then you can take, when you cut the bottom off, and, you know, ribs kind of run at a semi-Y anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, yeah.
You can cut that out of it and cut those bones straight on that rack of ribs.
Right.
And a lot of people don't realize that by trimming it on a bandsaw, you can shift that rack to where the bones
to where you can go straight up and down. Knife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's little tricks like that that we've learned over the years to do.
Yeah.
And it's
that's a dirty trick right there, man.
Not really. I mean, because in St. Louis ribs, you can cut off with, the knuckle. You can get your knife and...
Yeah, oh, yeah, we straight. We just, yeah, you can manipulate the straightness of your line just by, we flip the ribs over and we cut it from the back.
I do too.
And just take a pin and find out which section sticks out the furthest, put your pin right there and go along that and then go straight up to the top. And that's how we cut our straight lines.
I take a bigger knife, and if I can line it up straight and get right there like that, I'll take and chop it down and chop through. Even if it's on the edge of the end bone, it won't matter.
Because that'll break that back. The back end of the bone is what you're dealing with.
Yeah. They don't eat that. I'm just looking to get a straight row across the box, symmetrical.
They might do it in Houston. They might eat it like that in Houston.
Yeah,
they might. The popsicle, lollipop. Yeah, I got that on video.
You got that?
Yeah.
All right, good.
So what would you say y'all's guys' favorite contest is so far you've cooked on the circuit?
Oh, Springfest.
We haven't even cooked it yet.
No, we haven't, but it's looking pretty good down there. I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah, this is amazing.
It's a really nice event, and there's always good bands at play, and all that kind of stuff. What about what's the neatest trophy y'all have won on the circuit so far?
That we got a GC at Myron's Hog Drop this year, or sorry, at Michael's Hog Drop. So we went down to Unadilla, coming home from Disney trip, Christmas Disney trip with the family, stopped in Unadilla, and got ourselves a GC, and they have this chainsaw cat out there, and he's cutting all this artwork. But he makes the GC trophy in advance.
Not only that, the shellac they put on that thing makes for a great buzz when you're driving it all the way from Georgia all the way back to Virginia.
I was wondering what took
Virginia.
You so long to get home, man.
Yeah,
I got home like 2 days before him.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But, yeah, I think, to go back, Springfest so far has been one of the most incredible, for the general public especially, experiences, and I think that needs to be more available.
Yeah.
But – we did the last year of Banjo-BBQ in Evans.
Yeah,
Evans, Georgia. And that was the highlight of our barbecuing career, I think, as far as like going to a massive event and seeing all the bands, seeing all the stuff they do for the public. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience for us.
I wish we could have cooked that event. We were going to go cook it 1 year and something happened and we didn't go. Banjo-BBQ, Jim Burke had got us in. Because it stayed on the wait list.
Yeah, I mean, it's
always so full. And I can't remember, something come up, I had to go somewhere out of town for work, is what it was.
But yeah, I mean, they would put up probably 10 headliners in a weekend, the bands.
Yeah.
Like that band you guys had last night, they would have a few of those
in
the weekend. And there would be, maybe 1,000 people out there from the general public. And that's what kills these contests.
I think Hoosier played last night, right?
Yeah,
Is that how you say it?
I was having a hard time too. I thought it was Hoosier.
Yeah, Hoosier.
I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't know. But
I really
I'll tell
don't
you what,
know.
The sound was incredible.
Too sweet.
Yeah, that was the one he was closing with last night.
John was doing in the trailer. Take me to church.
I was on top of the trailer. It was awesome.
Oh, that's funny. We were at home by then.
Yeah, I was asleep. I got a text at 9:30 last night. I was passed out asleep.
Yeah, mission accomplished.
Good for you. Good for you. So that's the secret weapon in barbecue.
Well, for now, you know, having a new baby girl and all that and work, we're out by 9:30 every night and up by 5:30 every morning. So.
Yeah. That's good. You get your baby to bed at 9:30?
Usually. According to most people, that's pretty late for a kid, though.
My grew kid up in a musician's family, so.
That sounds pretty early to me.
A lot of them are like, oh, you put them to bed at 7 and they wake up at 7. Not my kid.
So how many contests will y'all cook this year?
Right now we've got 25, and then we kind of like to leave an area where we can add something on here and there. We're heavy in April, May, and then through
September, October.
Yeah, September, October is so hard in the restaurant business, and it's that final stretch in barbecue. So we decided last year we started hard in the beginning, worked pretty well. This year we're going to start hard in the middle, like right now. We're going 2 months straight every weekend. And then doubles. So we've got, like, in April we had 6 contests. There's only 4 weekends. And this month we'll have 5 contests, and there's only 4 weekends. So we try to fit some doubles in, and we're just going to hit hard right now. And then hopefully our families will let the door on. Well, the key will still work when we get home.
Well, no, it is. Yeah, you know. Been there before. So what upcoming contests are y'all looking the most forward to?
Well, next weekend is at Kannapolis. It's a double.
Jiggy with the piggy.
We've wanted to do that contest for years, and it's just always been a hard weekend for us. It's the first weekend in May.
Yep. We've got college graduation. We're in a college town in Williamsburg, so we get a lot of catering work through that.
Yeah, and I had a Cinco de Mayo baby. Our sister, who's our general manager, she's a Cinco de Mayo baby. So that whole weekend, then we're big nerds. We talked about that. So
May 4th be with you.
And so it's a pretty big nerd event at our restaurant.
We always have Obi-Wan cannolis on the menu and
Darth Taters.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty
cool. So that weekend is pretty hectic for us. We have a special menu on the 4th, a special menu on the 5th, and then the college graduation going on. But we're going to go to the
We're still
going to
compete.
We're going to go. We were going to try to like leave our trailer around here, like try to twist your arm, see where we could leave it here, because we're going to go to Lebanon.
That'd be back the other way.
Right. But we were thinking maybe fly into Memphis, drive back. There was all this logistical stuff we were talking about, and cooking on cans and Kannapolis, and that was going to be like, we're going to cook on cans at Jiggy with the Piggy. It's going to be this new thing we're going to do this year. And we just love cooking on the Outlaw, man. We can't do it. So we're taking the truck home.
I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't blame you.
I mean, once you cook on it, it's like, I don't want to do anything else.
I'm cooking on a new Outlaw this weekend.
Have you broken it in yet?
No.
Why? You know, why do
What's
that?
What's the point?
Just got here.
You're gonna break it in this weekend.
Spray some oil in and throw some ribs on it. Let her go. I'm gonna let it eat. I ain't worried about it.
Those cookers straight off the truck, man. They take a good flavor and they put it out.
I mean, great. And so I've got to get out of this morning kind of. That's a brand new trailer I haven't cooked in, and I don't know where anything's at. I've kind of got to get it set up.
That thing is
get it going.
That thing is cute, man. I got to tell you, it's just,
I like how
it looks so clean around it.
How small it is, all that kind of stuff. Well, just to wrap up, I want to tell you guys, thank you for being a part of the Heath Riles Barbecue team and believing in our product and using it on the competition trail like you guys do. And you guys are hella brand ambassadors, and I just appreciate everything you do for us and for our small family, and you guys are some hustlers and workers, having 3 businesses and rolling like y'all are going.
Man, we can't say thank you enough for believing in us. You know, we were little guys on the market, and we reached out and said, "Hey," you said, "Man, you guys are doing it," and you brought us on the team 3 years ago before we really launched the ambassador program, and so we really appreciate you believing in us. And we'll take your product everywhere and put it in front of people, and they just go, "Well, where can I get this?"
Well, I hope years to come that I can do a lot more for our ambassadors. That's the whole goal, and just constantly reworking programs to provide and do more. So hopefully there'll be a lot more to come in the future.
Oh, thanks. So,
thanks, man.
So is there you guys want to give kind of your socials where they can find y'all at online and your restaurant and everything like that?
Yep. So I'll go ahead and do the social, and he can handle the websites. The Optimus Swine 757. So we had to adopt the 757. It's our area code. We're not pilots. Nor will we pretend to be them. So, yeah, Optimus Swine 757. You find that on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
And then our website, the restaurant's www.twodrummerssmokehouse.com. Thought that was going to be easy until you have to type that out a million
you
times.
You
got to
spell out the number.
And then
two.
Our butcher shop is twodrummersbutchery.com. And so, anyway, we'd love to hear from anybody and love to sell you some pork or some barbecue if you come up our way.
Well, that sounds good, and I can't – maybe one of these days we're going to get up y'all's way because I'd love to eat y'all's restaurant for sure.
That'd be great.
So we'll get up there one of these days. Thank you guys again for coming on. It's always good to shoot the Q with some good old boys.
Thank you.
We'll see y'all next week with another episode of Shooting the Q.
Thank you for tuning in to the Shooting the Q podcast. If you have any comments or suggestions for future episodes, please feel free to reach out to us on our social media channels or through our website. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Leave us a review if you enjoyed the show. Until next time, keep shooting the cue.